All right, Patrick, topic number three, and for my money, I don't want to influence your opinion, but I think this is brilliant. Dateline, Phoenix, Arizona. Paul Azinger, U.S. captain of the 08 Ryder Cup team, announced on Wednesday that the order of the team matches on the first and second days of competition will be reversed, meaning there will be four foursomes, alternate shot matches, followed by four four-ball best ball matches. So he's flip-flopping. He's putting alternate shot matches in the morning, followed by the best ball matches in the afternoon. Why is he doing this for September 19th through 21st Ryder Cup at Valhalla Golf Club in Louisville? Because the Americans over the last few Ryder Cups have played better in alternate shot matches than they have in best ball matches. And he feels that the Euros have gotten out to a quick lead because they have played morning best ball matches, which they play better in. So the Americans have been behind the eight ball. So Azinger, and he has the ability to do this as the host captain. He's flip-flopping the rotation. Now, obviously, Sunday's matches, singles matches, you can't change those. So there's going to be 12 singles matches on Sunday. But Pat, good or bad by Azinger?
Russ, unless he can do the single matches on the first day, I don't think. What were the scores last two? 18.5 to 9.5, the last two times these continents met. This is another A-kicking waiting to happen. As long as, I've said this before, as long as Colin Montgomery, Sergio Garcia are on this team, two guys that do nothing playing individually, but for some reason the stars align when they play in this Ryder Cup and decide to make every putt 30 feet and in, the U.S. will not beat this team. They just won't. I don't care how many more alternate selections Azinger now going from 2 to 4. I think that'll help. This might help. But the Euros have something over the U.S. in this competition. I don't know what it is, because collectively or individually, they are not nearly on the same page as most of our players. But when they get into these group situations, they figure out ways to chip in, putt, do all kinds of stuff, again, that they don't do individually for whatever reason on the regular tours or even on the European tour. I've thrown up the white flag. After last time when I thought, Lehman did a great job trying to get these guys relaxed, bringing them out to Ireland and getting them, acclimated to everything, and they still laid an egg. I give up. I think Montgomery plays out of his mind, and those guys just feed off of
it. Well, Pat, respectfully, I completely disagree with you. I give Azinger tons of kudos for this. I think he's trying his heart out to change the root of history, which has not been good for the Americans, losing in 02, losing in 04, losing in 06 after that huge victory in 99 at Brookline. Kudos to Azinger. And I think the Americans, this is year. Colin Montgomery is like 45.
Doesn't matter. He still does it.
At some point, he's going to stop being the golden goose for the Euro team. And then somebody's going to have to step up. And, Sergio Garcia at some point is going to lose a match. I mean, his string can't continue the way he putts. So, he's on borrowed time as it is in the Ryder Cup. So the Euros are in for a big-time disappointment this year. I think it's great. I think it's great karma that Tiger has won a major at the venue for the Ryder Cup. I do buy into stuff like that. And kudos to Paul Azinger. Now, upon taking the captaincy in 06, he pushed for changes in the selection process. Instead of the top 10 finishes on the PGA Tour earning Ryder Cup points, now, this year, anyone who makes a cut on the PGA Tour will get some type of points. Also, Azinger got 4 at-large selections instead of just 2, meaning that the top 8 in points automatically qualify, and then Azinger tabs 4 wildcard picks. So Paul Azinger, he's been doing it for the last 2 years. Again, he changes the process. I think this is a brilliant move. I think the Americans will triumph in September at Valhalla.
You are wrong, Russ, but I applaud the moves. Hey, try anything to get out of it. Here's what I'd like to see real quick. Make Tiger the captain from now until whenever he decides not to play. Maybe he'll take it a little bit more seriously and impose his will to win this, because he doesn't want to be embarrassed as the captain. And let him pick all 12 players. Let him pick everybody.
So he'll have like Mark O'Meara.
And let him pick everybody, because he will not let those, whoever he picks, embarrass him as the captain. And believe me, those guys don't want to disappoint Tiger. They don't care about disappointing the country. They don't want to disappoint Tiger. I would let Tiger be the captain in perpetuity until he doesn't want to do it anymore, and let him pick the whole team. And then that will get his, ratchet up his seriousness in this thing, and let and those guys will not want to disappoint him. That would seal the win for the U.S. All this other stuff is just dressing.
Well, I think you're not too far off, Pat, because I can imagine Tiger Woods being a playing captain not too far in the future.
Well, I think it should happen. All right, Russ, number 4 to you. 2, we go to the LPGA Tour, and 2 of the prominent females of this tour are going to make their debuts in the next week or so. Annika Sörenstam in the SBS Open next week. Michelle Wee 2 weeks from now at the Fields Open. What are your expectations for both of these leagues?
Well, I think news for both of these players, this news in particular, is good. First of all, with Annika, I like the fact that she's committing herself to the 2008 season. She said she's going to play 20 tournaments this year on the LPGA Tour. That's a few more than she's played in years past. And she's starting her season earlier than she has in years past. This is the first time in 5 or 6 years that she will start her LPGA season in Hawaii. She usually waits until early March. So obviously you can tell Annika's committed, and she's got that bad taste from last year's 07 season. The first year since 1994 that she did not win on the LPGA Tour. So good news for Annika, because she's obviously all about business this year before she gets married in 09, and she kind of realizes this is her last shot at one more glorious year before she hangs up the spikes. Good news for Michelle Wee as well. Why is it good news that she's starting her season at the Fields Open in February in Hawaii? Well, the good news is because she didn't start her season already in the Sony Open in Hawaii in January.
And didn't come DFL at that tournament.
It doesn't matter where Michelle Wee starts her season. I think it's good karma for her that she's starting in Hawaii, where, of course, she's been born and bred. So I really think that she might vie pretty well in this tournament. Fields Open February 21st to the 23rd. But the juxtaposition of my point is the fact that she's starting her season on the LPGA Tour is the good news. Doesn't matter where it's at. I'm glad that she didn't play in the Sony in January in Hawaii against the men.
All right, let me start with Annika. I hate to say this. I'm not a huge Annika fan. I don't hate her or anything like that. But I think all athletes come to a point where they want to go for the ring one more time. They want to get the glory one more time. Now, Annika had no year, really, last year. She had some injuries, didn't really play that much, and when she did, was not successful. She's getting to an age now where, even though she's in super shape and all that, I'm not sure if she's just going to be able to mentally will herself to being the best player in the world. She can do it, certainly, but I think there's going to be there's other players now that have a lot of confidence based on the last couple of years where Annika really wasn't a factor, that now they're winning and they're younger. This is what I wanted to see on the PGA Tour, where you had some younger players that are winning and maybe could challenge Tiger. I think you have that on the LPGA Tour. So I think she might win a tournament or two, but I don't think this is going to be a runaway, 3 or 4 years, 5 years ago, Annika, where she was winning 10, 11 tournaments a year and winning a couple majors. I don't think you see that this year out of her. I think she contends, but I just think age and injury have caught up to her, and the field is more confident playing against her. Michelle Wee, on the other hand, I agree with you. I think she's finally wisened up. She's not playing on any men's events, which is step number one. I think she needs to concentrate on the LPGA Tour and making herself better in that venue. And does that include winning? I doubt it. But get herself into some top 10 situations. Let her confidence build up a little bit. Let her get to know these other players and what she needs to do against them to beat them. That'll probably take at least a year. And she's got to get rid of that hat that she's been wearing, Russ. Have you seen
that
baggy
little painter's cap?
That hat. I mean, it makes her head look huge or something.
I'm not a big fan of it.
But other than that,
Ryan Moore started that on the PGA Tour, wearing the pink little painter's cap with a small short brim. I just think it's cheesy.
It doesn't work for her. Maybe it works for him. But I don't see much for Annika this year. I do think we start seeing the rays of hope from Michelle without her actually winning anything and maybe getting her career on the path that it should have been on 3 or 4 years ago.
Is he
doing that on purpose? It's like every time I end.
good timing today by Colin on the Sounders to end and move on to the next topic. But I do agree with you, Pat. I think Michelle Wee, she's 17 years old now. She's a young woman. She's no longer a girl. She's taking classes at Stanford. I think she's a little bit more balanced than she was 2, 3, 4 years ago. Obviously, she's a little more mature, and we're going to start seeing her win. We're going to start seeing Michelle Wee win on the LPGA Tour very soon, possibly this year. All right, Pat, last one for you. And I talked about it in the very opening segment when we went over the FBR scoreboard and the leaderboard with J.B. Holmes going ahead after 3 rounds by 2 strokes, that I have had more fun this week watching the drivable 330-yard par 4 17th than watching the 160-yard par 3 16th. For me, for my money, the most exciting hole in golf is a drivable par 4, and TPC Scottsdale's 17th hole is among the best in the world. So the question to you, we know that there's Riviera number 10 at the old Nissan Open this year, the Northern Trust Open. It's the L.A. Open, if you ask me. Ben Hogan didn't win the damn Northern Trust Open back in the 50s. He won the L.A. Open. That's a topic from another show if you've been listening to us all year long. Anyway, Riviera number 10. We had Oakmont number 17, little 315-yard par 4, 17th, where we saw Jim Furyk lose the tournament, lose the U.S. Open last year to Angel Cabrera. TPC Scottsdale number 17. We know that TPC River Highlands for the Travelers Championship has that 300-yard, which is drivable for a 3-wood for Tiger and Vijay and Phil. Patrick, the best drivable par 4 in the world of golf is...
Boy, that is a real tough question. There are starting to become more of them in designs, and some of these past courses, they're kind of realizing, hey, there was nothing wrong with having a 300-yard par 4, you know, instead of adding 50 yards to it or whatever and making it much more difficult. So you're starting to see in design, and we can ask Robert Trent Jones this, you know, is this sort of a trend now, which I think it is, and a good one. The best one in my mind is probably 17 in Oakmont, and I'm biased because I played that course. And not only that one, 2's drivable, 14's drivable. Oakmont gave you, you know, it shows you the brilliance of the design, which is, you know, of course, is 100 years old. And they've been able to keep that basic design in play, even with all the modern equipment and stuff like that. So probably 17 at Oakmont is, in my mind, the best one. Number 6 at Wingfoot, I think, is an excellent hole, but it's in the front nine.
So I forgot about that. Well, that's a good point.
Doesn't really play into a lot of these.
I think that's a good stipulation. I think for it to be the best drivable par 4 in the world of golf, it's got to be on the back nine. I didn't mention TPC Boston, where we saw Phil and Tiger pretty much take out driver all 4 days last year at the Deutsche Bank. TPC at Boston, it's the fourth hole. It's a 300-yard par 4, but it's number 4. So it's way too early in the round. I think that's a good stipulation. Got to be on the back nine. For my money, it's Riviera's number 10. Now, I think we realize the original drivable par 4 is St. Andrews number 18. But for me, I hate to say it. I know this is sacrilegious, but I'm not a big fan of St. Andrews. It's just too bland for me. There's not enough excitement. It's all flat. There's tons of pot bunkers all over the place. There's not enough character to that course for me. I love Riviera number 10. I think it's a phenomenal hole. And I think I could not have said it better. So I'm just going to quote Aaron Oberholzer. So there's a great article in this week's Golf World about drivable par 4s from Jeff Shackelford. And he quotes Aaron Oberholzer. And this is perfect. This is why, in my opinion, Riviera number 10 is the best. Quote, when a short par 4 is done properly, it favors no one. And number 10 at Riviera is the poster child for short par 4s, Oberholzer said. A long hitter can hit driver, but if you miss it an ounce right, you're dead. No chance of getting up and down from the bunker. And if you lay up left, you have to lay up just far enough so that you're hitting straight into the throat of the green instead of crossing it at its narrowest point, because that green runs away from you front left to back right. It's a 300-yard hole that plays like a 450-yard hole, and the best characteristic of a drivable par 4 is if it makes you uncomfortable on the tee, and Riviera number 10 does.
But he goes on to say they can beat Tiger, I think, in that same quote. here's my other little stipulation. I agree with all that. I mean, it should make you a little uncomfortable, but it should give you the feeling like you can actually do this if you hit a decent drive. The one thing I hate about a lot of the new architecture that is having drivable par fours is that some of them are putting like lakes like right in front of the green, or they're putting a huge trap right in front of the green. Well, that negates your chance to go for it. You're not going to carry a driver onto a green and then have it hold. So if you're going to do a par four that's drivable, fine, but give us at least a little sliver of land that we can run it up there or something. I don't mind water on it or a trap on it per se, but don't stick the thing right in front of the green and then have the green elevated where no human alive except Tiger Woods can hit the thing.
Yeah, great point. Because
oh yes, Colin.
Great point, Pat. Obviously, a drivable par 4, the buzz term is risk reward,
right?
And when you make the risk too
go for it,
when you make it too much it. when you make it too much of a penalty for the risk, you're gonna have a lot of guys taking out 4 irons.
You will, and that's there's been a couple of circumstances where I've had it, and it's just, you know, you're like, it actually becomes ridiculous because you end up hitting like a 6 iron because the water's so prominent or the trap's so prominent in front.
It's
now you can
it.
Only hit it about 170 yards to get it somewhere in a safe zone, and that takes away from the whole thing. If you're going to let people do it, which I absolutely applaud, give us some, not a bailout area, but some area to hit to that you're not going to hit it right into water or sand.
You know, that's another reason why Oakmont 17. And I know we're going way over. We got a break here, but Oakmont 17 and Riviera 10, neither of those holes has water. and yet they're still fabulous. And I think that's another testament to the brilliance of the architecture. There's no water in play, but yet you can still make double bogey on both Oakmont 17 and Riviera number 10. So we'll agree to disagree, but I think both of us realize that Riviera 10 and Oakmont 17 are pretty much the two in the top of the list.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, another award-winning edition of Inside the Ropes here on Golf Exchange, presented by the Honda Classic, as we take a look at a handful of hot topics in the world of golf.